and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Rick Spinagle, and we're going to talk about holistic addiction treatment. And I might want to add that Rick was in October's Life Extension, and there's a very good article in there if you happen to get that magazine. And if not, there's a book out that he co-wrote with Brenda Watson called The Road to Perfect Health, which is not only about addiction treatment, but many, many things. It's a fabulous book, so you ought to take a look at it. Hello, Dr. Spinagle. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the time to come on my show. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, how you came to do what you're doing, where people can find you. And if you have any books or anything that you want to tell us about, please let us know.
Okay. Well, I have three books that are almost finished. It's been difficult to finish them because we continue to peel back more layers of the onion and find more causes below the cause, and so the books continue to get extended. But I have a book coming out, Female Hormones Causing Addiction, that Suzanne Summers will be endorsing. It explains that over 60% of new-onset addiction in middle-aged females is actually caused by female hormonal imbalance. I explain how the female hormones modulate or control the several very important brain chemicals and subsequently control the electrical current in the brain. And then we have one called Skinny Brain, Fat Body that explains how inherited brain chemistry issues that actually cause a smaller brain but no less intelligent brain cause overeating. And the third book is going to be The Second Black Plane, Mold Toxicity, and how it's destroying brains and bodies of all kinds of Americans. But anyway, those books are all in the final works at this point. I am the founder and medical director of Florida Detox and Wellness Institute, and I trained in intensive care, cardiac care medicine, anesthesiology, with the intent of being a full-time intensivist. I always enjoyed the sickest person in the university hospital and enjoyed the challenge working with hearts and so forth. But I ended up inadvertently moving into addiction medicine. In the late 90s, two things happened. I received a call from an Israeli physician who had worked on some more painless detoxification techniques, and having also done some pain fellowship work, I had some pain clinic patients, and they told horror stories about going away for detoxification from pain medicines like Percocet and OxyContin, and I began to analyze the detox techniques nationwide, and it was horrifying to find that they really hadn't changed over 50 years. And so I used my cardiac intensive care skills to design a painless and much safer detox, one that controls the adrenaline surges or prevents them, actually. So there is no heart racing, no elevated blood pressure, no shaking, twitching, tremors. And when I designed that technique in 97, 98, I knew that my focus was on protecting the heart. Did not know it protected the brain. But 8 years later, in 2006, University of Toronto proved that the traditional detox, where patients, quote, shake and bake, twitch and tremors, any twitches or tremors is symbolic of excessive electrical voltage in the brain and body, and that you actually are frying brain cells. And they put out a very concerning study in 2006 that proved that the detoxification techniques being used by America's addiction treatment centers actually caused more brain cell loss and subsequently smaller brains than drinking straight through over 10 years. They proved that the men, they looked at alcoholics and the men who went through detoxification once a year, of course relapsed because there was no work done on changing the brain chemistry, that they went through 10 detoxes over 10 years. They had much smaller brains, much more brain damage and brain cell loss than those who drank straight through continuously. And we know that every drink of alcohol kills brain cells. So that was somewhat discerning. So started out with the detoxification technique and thought that was my mission. However, after 2 years of that, by 2000, it was obvious that all these great patients like myself, my wife, my kids, were coming back. Wow, Dr. Spinal, we have a miracle detox. It's a painless detox. It's so much better than the previous detoxes I've been through. And I would say, Susan, John, why are you back here? And it was always, I feel more normal on the Percocet or the Vicodin or the Oxycontin or Xanax or cocaine. And I began to wonder, well, why do some patients feel more normal on cocaine and some patients are paranoid on cocaine? And that's been an 11-year quest of knowledge that's we'll get into tonight, what's actually going on with addicted folks. When you have all kinds of doctors, lawyers, school teachers, nurses, normal people tell you over and over they feel more normal on a drug, you begin to believe it. And what I've done over the last 11 years, since 2000, is prove just that patients do feel more normal on particular drugs. And furthermore, I've proven, having treated now 6,400 patients, 6,400 total, that patients use drugs, including food and alcohol and activities like sex and shopping, to stimulate underactive brain regions and or to quiet overactive brain regions. And once patients are empowered with this knowledge, particularly with the slides that we have available during my 4-hour family workshop on Monday afternoons, they all get it. Everyone understands it because it makes absolute sense. And so I'll leave it at that for now. I think I may have answered your questions so far.
Is this something that starts, this wasn't one of my original questions that I want to ask you anyway, is it something that's there when the person is a child and it just comes out, or what makes it start happening? What makes the addiction come out?
Well, there are inherited brain chemical issues and there are acquired issues. Einstein said, the eyes cannot see what the mind does not know. By 2000, I was able to ascertain that the number one inherited causation of addiction is a localized dopamine deficiency behind the forehead in the region called the prefrontal cortex, and that is in parallel with prevalence and causation with an inheriting an underactive reward center. And both those brain regions revolve around dopamine deficiency. However, there actually is not a global dopamine deficiency. There's a localized dopamine deficiency in that prefrontal cortex. Again, the region behind the forehead, above the eyes, particularly above the right eye, there's a dopamine D1 receptor. We have 5 different dopamine receptors in the brain, and the dopamine D1 receptor must be activated for that region to focus the rest of the smart brain, to break it, to bring quiescence at night, judgment, to filter extraneous stimuli, etc., and also to modulate and balance mood swings from the emotional center in the midbrain, a walnut-sized region that is larger in women than men, and that region contains both our reward center. We get excited when good things happen, a raise, a graduate high school. The other nerves in that region bring quiescence. They're what we call GABAergic nerves. And so there's a seesaw balance in that emotional center between getting real high or going real low. When someone says, I don't like your tie with that shirt, or I don't like your skirt or whatever, overreacting. The modulation of that seesaw mechanism in the midbrain comes from that prefrontal cortex. It is underactive in many Americans. They end up inheriting an enzyme that actually metabolizes or breaks down dopamine too fast and before it can activate the subsequent brain cell. So we end up with a string of light bulbs that are out, if you will, or underactive. in that region. In the emotional center, or excuse me, in the reward center, and they now call this reward deficiency syndrome, patients actually inherit less than normal dopamine D2 receptors. These are the happy receptors. So when you get excited about a new car, a raise, promotion, etc., you're actually getting a dopamine hit, if you will, where dopamine is released from brain cell storage units to those dopamine D2 receptors on the subsequent neurons within the reward center, and that's what makes you get high or get the joy. And patients who have inherited less than normal D2 receptors, and research over the last 10 years has proven patients can inherit down to 50% less than normal receptors, and it's everywhere in between. And those patients, whether they have a dopamine deficiency, a localized deficiency of dopamine in the frontal region, or they've inherited less than normal happy receptors in their reward center, they are a setup for any dopaminergic drug, any drug that stimulates a temporary release of dopamine from the brain cell storage units. All these brain chemicals, and let's just go back to the brain for a moment. The brain is both a chemical and an electrical organ. The brain chemicals are simply messengers that either turn up the electrical energy in the subsequent brain cell or turn it down. Dopamine is one of the primary electrifying or energizing brain chemicals, and it is specifically the brain. It is a specific brain chemical that activates the reward center. And so when patients inherit either the underactive reward center or the prefrontal cortex dopamine deficiency, they will chase a dopamine drug. Once they've been exposed to a dopaminergic drug, a drug that releases the dopamine from the storage units, none of the brain chemicals do anything in their storage units within the brain cells. They only work once they've been released from those storage units in brain cell A to the receptors on brain cell B. And all you folks see this, you see these two brain cells and the region between the brain cells called the synapse on all the Prestique, various antidepressant commercials. And so you get an idea of what I'm talking about. It's easy to do this on a webinar with slides, which I do on Tuesday nights for everyone who's interested. Every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, I perform a webinar for 2 to 3 hours, and I diagnose people over the phone.
And where would people find that?
What they can do is they call my office, and our website is, there's multiple URLs, but the shortest one is floridadetox.com. And you go to the website and get the phone number for the office, and we give people directions how to get on that webinar.
Okay.
And we have to somewhat be invited to come on because we're limited to 200 families, and it's not unusual, particularly since Life Extension did this beautiful article about what we do.
What a great article. It really was.
They did a great job. The doctor who interviewed me tried to prove I was snake oil, but in the end he was very convinced that what we do is real. And anyway, it was great for us to get our work, the name out, because what's happened is there's all these biochemical causes of addiction. And the inherited piece, I've just described two underactive brain regions. Let me just finish that before you digress, because it's so much to talk about, so many exciting things to talk about. I've been diagnosing these folks since 2000, and they will fall prey to any dopaminergic drug. Now,
can you just tell us? I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to forget if I don't.
Sure.
My listening audience, what kind of drugs would that be?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to list. There's a bunch of them. Alcohol causes a temporary dopamine hit, and all the opiate drugs, heroin, and all the pain pill drugs, OxyContin, Percocet, Vicodin. No matter what flavor of opiate it is, it causes a release. Now, of other interest, I find fascinating. We've known for over 10 years that alcohol converts to an opiate. So all you folks who have a glass of wine even, or two shots of rum or tequila, alcohol converts to acetaldehyde. That's the chemical that pickles your brain, your liver, and your pancreas. And then the acetaldehyde we've known for 10 years combines with brain dopamine and forms an opiate molecule, particularly in the Irish genes and some of the Irish Welsh, certain genetics have more. So when you drink alcohol, you actually load your OxyContin receptors, if you will, with an opiate. And most people still don't know that. And it appears a majority of the medical directors of these rehab centers don't know these things either, because all the patients I get who have been to 30 rehabs and failed never seem to know any of this science. And what I love to do is empower the families and the patients with knowledge. So all the opiates, alcohol, marijuana releases both dopamine and serotonin from storage units, and that's the only drug that releases both. Cocaine actually blocks the dopamine once it's released into the synapse region between two brain cells. Cocaine sits on the recycle wagon and prevents the dopamine from being recycled back inside the brain cell. So that's how it increases dopamine. The amphetamines will increase release and block reuptake or recycling. Food, to give an example of a beautiful study from University of Virginia back 5 years ago now, 2006, eating releases dopamine 3 times normal for an hour and a half, orgasm 10 times normal, and cocaine 100 times normal. And yet we've known now since 2001 that nicotine is stronger than any of the other drugs. So those are the main ones, nicotine, opiates, marijuana, and alcohol. And what's interesting, if you think about it, folks, I get asked all the time, I was recently interviewed by the DEA, how do you get your low relapse rates, and what's going on with Generation XYZ or whatever they are, age 18 to 30? And the DEA and the government is very concerned about this generation, and they wonder why some studies show that 80% of high school seniors are actually actively and ongoing using OxyContin or oxycodone or whichever flavor. Depends on the city. Oxycodone is big in Tampa. It varies city to city. But I explained to them that if you look back at the old movies, as I did after Elizabeth Taylor died, everybody was smoking. all the men, all the women. And then you watch Happy Days or Grease, and you see that all the high school seniors had the cigarette pack. The guys had up their T-shirt sleeve. We've done a good job over the last 30 years of decreasing teenage smoking and smoking in adults. But what we've done is shifted then the self-medication of patients who are born with these dopamine-deficient regions. We've shifted those patients from nicotine, which may be a good thing still because of all the cancer from all the carcinogens in cigarettes, et cetera. But we shifted them from nicotine to other things, and of course, we didn't have drug-dealing doctors on every corner like we do now in the 60s and 70s and in the 50s. But nicotine was very prevalent, and so a major shift. The subset of patients who genetically have the dopamine deficiency issues, the genetics has not changed that much in 50, 60 years. So really, the difference is it was so common in the 50s and 60s and so forth. Look at a World War II movie. Look at any of the 60s movies for patients to use nicotine, and now they don't. So it's way more common now for the younger generation particularly, but, you know, all age groups, to use opiates, which one can buy over the Internet. You know, go back to Grandpa's generation, and they used alcohol. And I determined in 2000, very early on, that the patients with these regions that are dopamine deficient will always be the bingers. They never have just one. So you have to understand what the drugs do. All those drugs I mentioned, alcohol, opiates, marijuana, nicotine, cocaine, amphetamines, they all release dopamine. Now, alcohol, cocaine is simple. It simply activates more dopamine activity in the brain. But alcohol and opiates are more complicated. Alcohol stimulates a temporary dopamine release, or dopamine hit, if you want to use that term. Yet alcohol also activates the GABA receptor, the Xanax receptor, so it has a quieting effect. And then, of course, it converts to an opiate, which makes it more complicated. Opiates have two effects. Opiates precipitate a dopamine release, yet they has a greater effect of calming the brain's electricity by blocking something called the calcium channel. When calcium goes inside the brain nerve, or for that matter, the sciatic nerve, then the nerve fires electrically. So we used opiates for years to reduce physical pain. The problem with opiate medication is it doesn't discriminate. We want to block the pain, the increased electrical voltage in a pinched sciatic nerve. We want to block that voltage down with an opiate just in the sciatic nerve. However, they block the voltage in the brain. They block it throughout the body. That's why they cause constipation. They decrease the electrical current in the nerves that innervate the muscle around the bowel, so the bowel doesn't squeeze and patients get constipated. So the opiates are very indiscriminate. And furthermore, the studies I present in my workshop demonstrate very recent studies from the University of Minnesota and other places that within 3 days of IV morphine, we start to destroy in brain cells and brain cell dendrites. And most of the pain doctors don't perform any research on brain scans and so forth, so they're very unaware of this, which is blatant. They're painfully obvious at meetings. But so opiates are the hot drug for Americans, and they've replaced nicotine in that subset of patients who inherit dopamine deficiencies. The other factor that has become so prominent with the younger generation is that since 1980, we have seen the prevalence of anxiety, insomnia, panic disorder triple, and depression for that matter. And the majority of that comes from changes in the gut, in the intestine, derived from the expansive antibiotic use since World War II. Naturopathic doctors have attempted to warn us arrogant MDs for 30 years, at least 25, that there was a Pharmageddon coming, at which time we would see elevated levels of antibiotics in the city water, etc. And that point is here. Prior to 1980, we didn't see nearly as much depression, anxiety, insomnia, and panic disorder. And what's happened is we had the first advent really of penicillin was in 1944. The first mass production was in 1944 in Britain. It was for British American troops, and it was a, quote, miracle drug. They actually used the penicillin mold, and the aflatoxin is a very dangerous toxin. Produced the penicillin mold in your homes, and we'll talk about that later tonight probably, but that's what kills the bacteria, and it kills humans too, but it kills bacteria they much faster. So it was a miracle drug, and the war ended a year later. We brought it back across the Atlantic, and unfortunately, by 1945, our poultry farmers had moved the chickens and turkeys in from the barnyard, like our great-grandfathers and grandmothers had, running around free-range, eating natural, healthy things, to packing 200 or 300 in chicken and turkey houses. And so when one got pneumonia, they all got pneumonia. So they embraced the penicillin. Wow, this is great. And we began loading penicillin antibiotics into our poultry feed. And then the milk farmers decided to give it a try. And they found early on, by the late 40s, that the milk cows gave more milk if they kept them on antibiotics. And then all of us foolish Americans decided, at least us men, that we prefer a steak we can cut with a fork versus a knife. Now, buffalo and deer run free range, and the meat's tough because they run, as do free range cattle. But to get more money out of every pound of beef, the beef industry decided years ago, back in the 60s at least, in or late 50s, that golly gee whiz, we get more per pound if the meat's very tender. To get the tender meat, we have to let the cows stand in a stockyard in Kansas City and not move around. They just stand there in their own poop. You have to get the visual on this, folks, because it's all real, and it's very, you really got to get this. So to prevent the hoof rot, we have to load that feed with antibiotics, and this is what we've been doing now, folks, for 60 years. And we now reach a stage where a majority of the city water is inundated with antibiotics. For example, Philadelphia, 74 cities, at last count, had measured antibiotic levels in their city water. They're not required to do so by the FDA. I would have assumed they were. The FDA says we've blessed all these pharmaceutical medications as safe for humans, and so we don't have to have them measured. 74 cities did, tried to hide their data from the Associated Press, who used the Freedom of Information Act to get this information. It's very important to know these things, folks. Philadelphia City Water, for example, is inundated very significant levels of amoxicillin, zithromycin, and Bactrim. And we can blame a lot of this on pediatricians. And I'll get to that in a moment. But
well, let me just say this. We're already at 8:30, so we've only got 30
minutes.
Oh, I'm
sorry. So well, there's so much to teach.
But I know. My listeners get you, though, because we talk about this. So what basically saying is everybody's eat up with candida or gut problems.
Well, exactly. What we've got now is the candida overgrowth in the gut, and not only candida, but some very ugly bacteria. And their toxins shut down the serotonin production in the small intestine. The first step of making serotonin is in the small intestine, and there's no conversion of tryptophan to 5-hydroxytryptophan in the small intestine. The 5-HTP goes to the brain and becomes serotonin. And we have now really 90% of Americans with serotonin deficiency, and the serotonin deficiency causes two specific overactive brain regions that a majority of the country have. And the young kids at age 17 have had as much antibiotic exposure in this generation as I'm 55, as my generation would by age 40 mm-hmm. or 50. And so what we have now are all the kids who try these drugs, a drug like OxyContin, any of the opiates, they need to normalize brain electricity. They need the quieting effect and the stimulating effect if they have the certain genetics. So it's they don't say, hey, that drug got me a little high. I may take it in a month or not. They go to Susan or John at the party and say, hey, I need that drug every day. And that's where we're at with this younger generation particularly.
Let's back up to the dopamine deficiency. If we're dopamine deficiency, does tyrosine, is that the precursor to that?
Yes, before tyrosine is a amino acid called phenylalanine.
Uh-huh.
What's interesting?
Would you say DL or L or D or?
Well, the problem with tyrosine.
Were those?
The problem is this, even is that I measure amino acids levels in every patient, and the majority of my patients, addicted and non-addicted, are in the bottom 2 to 4 percentile nationwide. There's so much amino acid deficiency in America, it's just pathetic. Because of the candida overgrowth you alluded to, and the toxins from the bad pathogenic bugs causing such severe inflammation of the intestinal lining, the majority of Americans are not able to move these amino acids from their intestine over into the blood. So even if you take the tyrosine, I mean, it's better to take it per se, I recommend tyrosine spray to those patients, actually, so they're sublingual, to mm-hmm. bypass the intestine. The other thing you can take is really you can take L-DOPA. There's two steps to converting the tyrosine in the chicken or turkey to the dopamine, and the rate-limiting step, the first step, is through tyrosine hydroxylase, and that one requires adequate iron, vitamin D, and B6. Of which most Americans are deficient unless they're taking really high-quality vitamins. So you can either take the tyrosine. If you do, I suggest sublingual spray versus the tyrosine pills because there's such poor absorption in a majority of Americans. Mm-hmm. And if you do take tyrosine spray, you still may not convert well based on other deficiencies. So you really have to know every biochemical reaction in the body and what all the cofactors are to practice quality medicine. Of course, that's not what we're taught. We're taught to use drugs, which always just treat the symptoms. So, but
well, not on my radio show. We never talk about drugs,
well,
except how bad they are.
Well, they generally treat the symptom and not the cause.
So my next question, and I have a million, but I don't even know where to start because there's so many I have now that you're talking. If the gut bacteria interferes with serotonin and taurine, how do you know if you need the serotonin and the taurine or the tyrosine?
Well, I use neurotransmitter testing, and I use it from a company called Neuroscience. And I'm the number one doctor in North America as far as the volume of testing I've done. I recently met with the chairman and so forth, and we were going over these things. The problem with the testing is I've done over 6,500 tests. You do the testing for a while, and you think that you can take their numbers, their optimal ranges at face value, and you can't. And I recently spoke for them, the 200 physicians, and explained that they have to report by the government-set standards the averages of what comes in Americans. And again, like the serotonin values on there, they'll say an optimal value is 125, 175. Well, and truthfully, I'm the only physician in all of North America who has compared those numbers to brain scans. And the two specific regions that become overactive, the worry center and the emotional center, from serotonin and taurine deficiency, and of course the taurine piece of that is all my research, but what the values they tell you are good, excellent values, are not. You can multiply them fourfold or fivefold. It takes five times on average what they tell you is an optimal value on both those brain chemicals before you can quiet those two overactive regions. And you only know that after you've done this enough, and there's, every one of those numbers has a twist on it. If the numbers are very low, then they're definitely low. But there's always
yeah, most of their people are already low to begin with, so there's really no comparison.
Exactly, because if you compare again to your great-grandfather, grandmother, they went through the Depression. They didn't whine, did they? People whine today over nothing, because that emotional center, when it's overactive, you whine. You're negative, moody, irritable, and depressed, and easily offended. Even the whole country is easily offended, aren't they? Can you get out of the grocery store parking lot without someone being offended?
Yeah.
and so we're in a sad state. So I've moved all of those numbers up to what I call the spinogolism levels. And we know that it takes an 800 serotonin level in the majority of Americans to quiet those regions, and a taurine level of 2,000 to 4,000, whereas they'll say the optimal levels are a few hundred, and it's wrong.
Yeah. Are there particular symptoms that appear depending on which one you need?
Yes,
give people an idea.
If you the serotonin deficiency, serotonin and taurine actually quiet brain regions by enhancing the primary relaxing brain chemical GABA. GABA turns down the voltage when it attaches to the brain cell receptors, and really serotonin and taurine just enhance that effect. The walnut-sized emotional center in the midbrain, we call it the emotional center because it stores our emotionally charged memories. It's larger in women than men and more active in women than men, unless the men are deficient in serotonin and taurine. The overactive limbic system or emotional center gives you these symptoms. Depression, and it may not be frank depression either. You don't enjoy things you used to enjoy. You're more moody, more irritable, less socially inclined. You may have been a social butterfly. You wanted to go out with three couples every Friday night 5 years ago, and now you've developed these changes, and now you don't want to go out. And if you're not careful, because it's such an insidious change, you'll assume you're becoming more mature when actually you're losing social desire. And it moves all the way from a little bit of less social desire to the autistic kids that I treat. I usually reverse the autistic kids, everything that they've been dealing with for 20 years, in 2 weeks, and I do that for natural medicines. But one of the things they have are the most overactive emotional centers you ever find on a brain scan, and some of the worst numbers. And the epitome of social anxiety is when you can't look someone in the eye. Just think Rain Man, folks. And so I meet a young autistic kid. I'm like, "Hi, Julian, how are you?" And they're looking at the ground. Never look up and say, "Doctor, I'm fine, Dr. Spinago, how are you?" You know, that kind of thing. So what we don't have in medicine enough discussion and thought regarding the relativity of things. So you can move from a little bit less social to pure social anxiety and easily offended. And you'll notice how the younger generation, if you're trying to tell your daughter, "Wow, that's a great paper, but you should prepare a comma here. I got it. You ever notice that? I notice that with my kids and all the kids. So we have this whole generation, the younger ones, is particularly easily offended. They're more mopey, they're more moody, and everybody wonders what's wrong with them.
Would self-worth issues fall in that level?
Absolutely. Loss of self-worth, and hopelessness, and excessive guilt.
Okay. But what if their drug of choice is a stimulant, you would say they're more dopamine needing. If their drug of choice is like a barbiturate, you would say they need serotonin taurine. Is that right?
Well, it's not that simple. I wish it were. The gut is somewhat elementary to me now, but that's one of the first naturopathic things I moved into. Okay, so let's assume that the intestinal issue is a problem and we have the serotonin taurine deficiency.
I have a question there, too. Sorry, I just got a million.
Sure.
On the gut, if somebody has a really bad gut problem, you know, alternative medicine doesn't always work quickly. You know, it didn't happen overnight, and it's not going to get well overnight.
No.
Should somebody use, like, a drug like nystatin along with some probiotics, or should they just stay on the probiotics?
I used to use Diflucan, which is much stronger than nystatin, and actually I used Candigon, one of Brendan Watson's products. If you look at stool sample studies, Diflucan, which is much stronger than nystatin, will only kill 50% of the Candida colonies in the intestine, and Candigon, which is 11 natural herbals, will kill all of it. You have to be careful. I learned the hard way that it's too harsh for some of the sickest people. But what you can't do, it takes several months to fix the gut. So I don't fix the gut first. I bypass the gut.
Okay.
I bypass the gut with certain products I use to enhance taurine. In my program now, I've designed, invented, whatever you want to call it, an intravenous program 2 years ago. I can change that brain with the overactive, stubborn, because we didn't talk about the other brain region, the anterior cingulate, which gives you stubborn, worry, my way or the highway, hyperfocus on the negative. So pretty ugly symptoms from those two brain regions being overactive. It would take me in the early 2000s using medications, which I, you know, now preached at every meeting to doctors that, you know, the serotonergic drugs don't help you make one molecule of serotonin. All they do is push it around the brain, and if there is none being manufactured because the gut's not sending any precursor up to the brain, they don't even work. And that's why so many of you women on the phone, if it's like most of the Wednesday night or Tuesday night webinars I do, the majority of you ladies on the phone have friends that are on mega doses of serotonergic drugs. They start you on 20 a pack, so now you're on 80 and 100. And some of the Harvard psychiatrists now are putting people on 3 serotonin drugs, which is idiotic. They all sit on the same receptor, and they do nothing if there's no serotonin in the brain to work with. But the point is, you can bypass the intestine. I do intravenous amino acid precursors to brain chemicals, and I can move that moody, irritable, negative, stubborn brain. In 3 to 5 days, I can move that brain back to normal. What used to take me 6 months to a year with medications, if I ever got there.
Yeah,
you cannot
question.
Wait, particularly when treating addiction, you cannot wait to get the brain chemistry and electricity balanced. You don't have that time. You have to move fast. Otherwise, they will relapse to their medication.
I have two questions before I forget. What are your amino acid precursors that you use? And number two, most people that need taurine also have a magnesium deficiency. Do you find that?
Yeah. I don't give out everything in my amino acid drips are proprietary. The same, these drips are somewhat complex, and I've got every doctor in America now, after I spent thousands of hours designing my program, the program reverses the Alzheimer brain in 2 or 3 weeks, total reversal, which has been proven with PET scans and the autistic. I've got everyone wanting all this for free after I've spent reading 40 hours a week, brain science, et cetera, so I don't give out the entire thing I do. I will address the magnesium factor. It's the excessive candida. The excessive candida, when they are digested by the pancreatic enzymes, we get excessive production of a protein called beta-alanine. That protein is a neurotoxin itself, but it goes to the kidneys, competes for taurine with reabsorption. When the taurine is passed out, wasted, if you will, through the urine, it drags magnesium and potassium with it as salts. So you always see magnesium and potassium deficiency together. Both of those, deficiency of both of those causes more excess electrical current in the brain or anxiety, insomnia. Potassium blocks the sodium from going in the nerve, and the sodium entering the nerve in the brain causes electrical firing. In fact, the general anesthetics block the sodium channel. So magnesium blocks calcium. So magnesium is actually, folks, think of it as your natural OxyContin. So the magnesium and potassium deficiency, as well as the taurine deficiency, is derived from the dysbiotic intestine, and that's the mechanism.
I wish my show were 6 hours long. I could pick your brain for that long.
Well, that's what everybody says. I interviewed with Suzanne Summers last Thursday, and she set up 2 hours for her new book, which comes out in May. And she says, oh, my God, we need 20, 30, 50.
Yeah.
She's going to come in and sit down for a few days, I think, because I've gone fairly deep and fairly wide, and we're not scratching the surface. Because
okay. Well, I have a personal question, though.
Sure.
I think I told you this while we were on hold waiting on the show. I have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She's 18, just turned 18, and she really wants to be well. She's doing everything she's known that I can figure out to do. She's detoxing with metal, heavy metal detoxing. She's doing coffee enemas. She's eating diet, good diets. I mean, she's doing a million things. But she cuts.
Mm-hmm.
She gets in a panic attack, and I don't mean little cuts. I mean big cuts. Scares me out of my mind. I think she's going to die when she does it. And when she gets through, she goes, why did that do that, Mom? Couldn't
well,
help
it. Well, has she gone through any traumatic event lately?
Yes.
Any?
Okay. Yes.
Lost a loved one or some traumatic event?
It was a big traumatic event.
There's actually two things for her daughter. And if you folks tune in on Tuesday night, you'll hear me diagnose people, including folks like Eva. You have inherited yourself a very mild dopamine deficiency in your prefrontal cortex. That's why you've always been a multitasker, a woman who does the work of two women. You will pack 10 pounds of work into a
You're
pound
absolutely
day.
Right.
I can tell you a life story. I do this on Tuesday nights, and it always people think I'm psychic. It's not psychic. It's if you care enough and are passionate enough to pay attention to patients, after you learn the brain science, and again, I've spent 30, sometimes 40 hours a week reading brain science. You have to understand, medical knowledge doubles every year. All my colleagues, the folks my age I came to town with years ago, most of them haven't read anything but drug rep marketing literature, which is 90% lies to begin with, and they really have no clue what the truth is. So that's another story. But if you learn the science, and the brain science is exploding, and I read European brain science all the time, then you pay attention to patients and families, and then you know the story. And the real story with you is, you have always been you think you're a type A personality, and the mild level of this dopamine deficiency is labeled type A personality. What you inherited, Eva, is a super COMT enzyme, the enzyme that breaks down dopamine in the synapse, and in your case it breaks it down 4 times faster than normal. The Jim Carrey, Robin Williams level of this is 6 times faster, and your level is the level of every CEO of a Fortune 500, every ER doctor, and everyone who has built their own business out of nothing, man or woman. And when you were 13, if I could talk to your mother, she'd say that you packed 6 pounds of play into a 2-pound evening, and she had difficulty getting you to come in for dinner because you had so much going on. So anyway, your daughter inherited this gene. It never bypasses a generation. So your daughter will have inherited this gene to begin with, and it's 95% affects only the prefrontal cortex. It's very mild in your case, and I would assume your daughter's case. But the rest of the brain is also affected, but mildly. Now, if she recently went through a traumatic event on top of that, she has had a D2 dropout. We have a study from the National Institute of Drug Addiction back in 2005 that demonstrates that when bad things happen, that happy receptor in the reward center, the dopamine D2 receptor, actually drops out temporarily. So even if you have normal dopamine production and activity, And now you go through divorce, a diagnosis of cancer, you lose your house, you lose your job, whatever that negative event is, you will go through a temporary D2 dropout. And none of the psychiatrists in America seem to know this, because if any of you folks go through one of these bad events, you walk into a psychiatric office, they will automatically, knee-jerk reflex, put you on a serotonergic medication, an SSRI, Paxil, Prozac, Lexapro, Celexa, whatever, and they actually can make you worse and even kill you, make you suicidal.
Yes, she actually died. September a year ago, she died, but
well,
we brought her back.
What I explained to an ABC News anchor, and it's on my media page, folks, FloridaDetox.com, go to the media page. She wanted to know about these drugs, the antidepressants causing suicide in teenagers. I said, well, that's the fallacy of the American Psychiatric Association. When a young kid here in Tampa flew his airplane into a tower a few years ago and killed himself, after that they put a black box warning on these drugs because don't get me started on these people. They have
so
no idea.
So what do you do for that?
What you have to do for that, and you won't like this, is you have to temporarily use a dopamine stimulant like Vyvanse, because nothing you do naturally, trust me, I have tried to do this all natural, you cannot treat it. Temporarily, you have to use a dopamine stimulant, one of the only big pharma drugs that I actually like, for multiple reasons. A, when you inherit the underactive regions, if you leave them underactive, and this is hot off the press from European brain scientists, hasn't reached American neurology yet. If you leave those regions underactive, even the mild ones like you have, I have, all the brilliant inventors have, what happens is you're going to get Alzheimer's early because your four-second working memory, the processing memory, is in that region. If you put your fingers above your right eye and left eye and move them out to the side, on both sides, that's where the four-second processing memory is. That's the first region that goes dark as you begin to acquire Alzheimer's. You never want to leave those regions underactive, any inherited region or any region that's underactive from trauma, which is a whole other night. So, those medications are very good. They not only stimulate a dopamine hit, they actually, over time, have proven in a recent study to increase the dopamine D2 receptors, and they will actually increase the blood flow in trauma and stroke regions. And if you look at my Alzheimer page at the bottom, there's a 94-year-old gentleman who was in a coma for 2 years, and one of the things I used to wake him up out of his coma in 11 days is Vyvanse, the newest, most pure dopamine stimulant. You would never use an ugly drug, a dirty drug like Ritalin. It's 50% adrenaline. It's not even the brain chemical.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have 10 minutes, by the way.
Oh, wow. Well, it's just too much to go through in this time frame. But here's the thing. For that temporary dropout, you have to increase the dopamine activity in that reward center. And what happens is these folks will cut. They'll commit suicide. When they cut, they get an endorphin hit. And remember, the endorphins are opiates. And what do the opiates do? They will cause an increase release of dopamine in that nucleus accumbens or reward center. And I've treated hundreds of the cutters after they've been to multiple $50,000 ranches and they start cutting the data walk. I mean, you cannot talk your way out of all these things. They're biochemical and etiology. So what you have to do is treat that person temporarily until they can get through the counseling to get over the negative event, quality counseling being the key word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What do you do after that?
Well, the thing is this. I believe in counseling. I refer people to counseling all the time. I don't believe in group counseling in the least. I believe in target-specific counseling. And it's more difficult to find a quality counselor than it is a quality surgeon.
No kidding.
And, I have a man in St. Petersburg that I can send a woman who is raped by her own father. The stepfather is bad enough. The uncle is bad enough. But your biological father forces you to have sex from age 11 to 14. I have a lot of those cases, Eva. And guess what? This gentleman can get them over that in 3 or 4 weeks. Is that amazing?
I wish I lived close. I live up in the mountains, in the Appalachian Mountains, in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, you lucky thing. I would love to be back up there.
Yeah, fabulous. That's why we moved here, to help her heal.
Well, you have to have the people who know how to do that. But again, when that reward center shuts down, they lose their cognitive function. I have a partner, one of the doctors that was in the company I built the anesthesia company before I got out of all that. His son committed suicide 2 years ago, and at the funeral, I told the doctor, and I said, "To if you, your wife, or one of your other four children falls into a deep cognitive depression, they can't get out of bed, then please don't take them to a Tampa Bay psychiatrist, for they were surely promoted a serotonergic drug." As you increase serotonin activity out in that synapse with those types of drugs, you actually prevent the release of dopamine more. That's why those drugs cause suicide in these situational depression cases. That may be what happened to your daughter. I don't know.
So when you do that Vyvanse, you do that for a temporary time, then wean them off, and then what?
You wean them off once they've had their healing through the through the counseling.
Don't need anything anymore? They get
No. And the thing is, the mother of this suicidal case, 11 days after the funeral, the kids brought her to me. She hadn't left the bedroom. They fed her in bed. They drug her to the master bathroom. One day, I had her up smiling. She looked like a bag lady. She hadn't had a shower in 11 days when she came in to see me, and I treated her. Now, you have to know what you're doing. This is not for amateurs, Eva.
I understand that.
You know, I've treated probably 2,000 patients who inherited an underactive reward center. By the way, all those patients have been to at least 7, if not 11, psychiatrists in multiple universities, and what they do with them is call them refractory depression and shock them because they're raising the wrong chemical. Serotonin actually makes it worse, okay? So your daughter is someone you need to bring to me right away so I can do what I do and bring her out of this within no more than 48 hours. And
so you could do that in that length of time?
I do it every week. And if you look at my website, Cheryl, the first video you see, 25 years going to medical centers all over the country, talks about it. By the way, Cheryl's lost 73 pounds as well. But because a lot of people overeat for this.
Now, do you, she certainly doesn't do that. She's like a toothpick. But do they stay in your clinic, or do they just come in and you see them?
It's all outpatient. I'd like you to stay in town for 1 week. I do a lot of spiritual work, too. I'm in Tampa Bay. I'm actually in Clearwater, Florida, Palm Harbor, which is, you know, we're 10 miles from Clearwater Beach, so patients come in.
I have a friend there.
Never been there.
Doctor friend there. I could come stay with him.
You need to come down and let me treat your daughter because, trust me, she needs to get out of this. She's in a very dangerous place, and I have treated probably 2,000 people in this place.
All right, well, you've got 5 minutes. Tell us where you are. Tell us whatever you want to talk about in this 5 minutes. I mean, I have questions we didn't get close to. But
sure. Well, we just need to do more of these. It takes, it's like Suzanne Summers said, you have so much information, it's overwhelming, and it is a lot.
We didn't even get to mold or fungal toxicity.
No, and what I've determined in the last 3 years is that mold toxicity is probably the second most common acquired cause of addiction. And if you folks go to my website, the best thing you can do is forget the addiction. I teach every week. I will walk into my workshop tomorrow. There will be 15, 16 new families there from all over the world. 50% of the people will be there for addiction, they think, and 50% will be there for wellness, which means they're not well, and they've been to multiple universities and wellness centers and spent a fortune, and they can't get out of bed. And I tell them, you folks have all the same things. All the addicted people have all kinds of acquired things that have made them use drugs to feel halfway decent, to bring them out of depression, to control panic disorder. And by the way, I have proven over the last 2 years, have seen over 180 patients, I call them kids, because anyone under 50 is a kid to me, I'm 55, have proven that out of 180 patients diagnosed bipolar, that it is acquired. And you folks have to go to my mold toxicity page, my MS page, my Parkinson's page, Alzheimer's page. All those things are names. Parkinson was a guy. Alzheimer was a guy. They talk
labels,
about symptoms.
I get that.
It's just symptoms. These people all have common denominators. The majority of the people that come to me, addicted or non-addicted, have multiple brain infections, Lyme, Bartonella, Babesia, mycoplasma. These are bugs that go inside the brain cells, inside every cell in the body, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and they all have toxicity, a multitude of benzene toxicity and thuridine since the oil spill. The crude oil is 30% benzene. No one's looking at this but me, and it's killing people. Mold toxicity is killing Americans. Our grandparents didn't have airtight homes. They didn't use drywall. God gave us stone and logs. Mold grows on those stone and logs, but can't eat them. It eats wet drywall for lunch. And 90% of my patients, Eva, have mold toxicity
that causes severe depression,
anxiety, panic, bipolar. I've had five kids being anyone from up to 35 in this case, labeled schizophrenic by multiple universities, and have proven every one of these folks has excessive electrical voltage in the brain. And you folks can see examples of a normal-looking brain scan compared to a mold toxicity brain scan on the mold toxicity page. And I explain how there's specific brain chemicals, glutamate, the strongest electrifying brain chemical, and PEA, phenethylamine. These chemicals skyrocket when your brain is saturated with these fatty toxins. And it's amazing, Eva, how many patients, women particularly, come to me in wheelchairs because of severe mold toxicity, and that's a whole other night, but it causes depression, anxiety, insomnia, OCD, panic disorder, bipolar, etc., and MS, tremendous MS, even in 25 and 30-year-olds. So, folks, get your kids out of the basements and watch the dormitories, because the dormitories, they cut the air off all summer long, and I have so many kids that start using OxyContin after they move in the parents' basement at 16 or 19, or after they move in a moldy dormitory, and they're simply trying to quiet their brain's electrical current down to normal. And that's we need to spend a night on that, Eva, because it is so prevalent.
Well, we will. I'll call you and get you some more. I stay booked up about 4 to 5 months, but I'll do that if you have some time
sure.
in a couple of months.
You need to get your daughter down here to see me. Why don't you call Audra tomorrow? She needs help now. Is she still down in a black hole?
She's good today, but I'll call you.
Call us.
I'll call you.
And all the folks on the phone, tune in on Tuesday nights, and you can get a personal consult. I try to move through families every 15 minutes, and you'll see all kinds of folks that have the same issues you folks do.
And where can we find you?
It's FloridaDetox.com. It's
thanks
Florida
for
Detox
everything.
And Wellness Institute. FloridaDetox.com.
Thanks, Rick, for having the nerve to go out on the edge like you've done. I know it's been a hard thing.
It's been a lot of work, but you know what? It's rewarding to change lives in these patients.
I know it. Thank you. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.